You're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show. Always thrilled to follow a White Sox win. I am broadcasting from our Allstate Skyline Studios South. I'm in the basement of our state capitol in Springfield. Joining us in studio in the Allstate Skyline Performance Studio, actually, is Scott Stantis, the editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. A lot going on in our capitol. Scott, one of the weird things that happened earlier today, I mentioned last night that they had to get everything done by midnight, and during the day today came news that the Speaker of the House informed the representatives that they would be staying, planned to stay till Sunday. So a lot of people were, I think, went home to their hotels and started washing their socks and underwear. A little bit different than yesterday. There were, as we mentioned, and the conversations that we had with legislators, of course, we talked to representatives Batnick, Martwick, Kifowit, and Cabello, and that was a lot of our conversation was based off of the debates that I witnessed from the press box on the floor of the House. Today, the only major debate during the day was over the legalization of recreational marijuana, and that, do you want to know how long it lasted, Scott? How long do you think it took for the House to pass it?
I'm going to say 10 minutes.
It started at 10:30. And ended at I believe it was 1:55.
Good Lord, what did they debate?
No, was it 2:55? I'm sorry, it was 2:55.
What did they debate?
Yes. A lot of people stood to give their own personal accounts of why they were in support of the legislation, and others, you know, rose to give their reasons for not wanting it to pass. So we'll talk more about that after the news and the budget that passed in the House. Did you know that?
I do now.
We'll talk more in a moment. It's time now for our news. Our conversation is going to be going on until 1, and we'd love to have you join us if you want to text 312-981-7200. Time now for your news. Here with everything you need to know is Roger Badish.
This is the Patty Vasquez Show.
Follow me on Twitter at Patty Vasquez, CHI.
On 720 WGN.
Some people see the revolution, but most only see the girl. I can lose my heart and freedom if my fear defines my world. I declare my independence from the critics and the stones. I can find my revolution. I can learn to stand alone.
Thank you so much for joining us. You're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show on 720 WGN. I'm so excited that you are here. And Scott Stantis, I'm excited that you're in the Allstate Skyline Studios in Chicago on the 18th floor, and I'm not excited that I'm in the basement, although you know how much of a dork I am, that I am.
Yeah.
It was a great day here in the Capitol. Look, there's a lot going on here, and there was a lot of compromise when it came to the budget. Before we get to everything else, I want to tell you how thrilled I was to meet one of our listeners. Scott, I don't know if I mentioned on the air last night, a woman named Lisa messaged me and said, hey, my son just won a journalism award. He was a runner-up, the number one journalist for journalism in the state of Illinois. He's coming to Springfield. We're going down there on the train, and we have a luncheon tomorrow. Any chance, you know, we're going to be in the Capitol. And I said, I will meet you in the rotunda by the statue. And I showed them all around the Capitol, actually introduced them to their legislator. And this is exactly why I come down here, is I want people to be interested and engaged in their government. You know, the state politics that goes on down here is important to everyone throughout this great state of Illinois. And we want to keep it great by, you know, learning, observing. They watched they actually watched part of the marijuana legislation, the debate going on, and got to see the vote pass. I mean, and it was interesting because she was not necessarily in favor of it, and her son was.
Oh,
so
interesting.
That was an interesting conversation, yeah.
Oh, that's you're the best. That's really nice. Were they good people? Or?
Oh, they were wonderful, Matt and Lisa. So it was a pleasure to meet them. And there you have it. And believe me, and people, my husband was like, you just told people to meet you at a statue? And I said, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of security in this building in case Lisa was not who she said she was.
Just a little cray-cray. But she wasn't, so this is
no,
nice.
She was not. It was wonderful.
Oh, yeah. That's so neat. Isn't it cool? I mean, you're like me. You're kind of a
dork.
Dork.
Say
yeah,
it.
Dork's
dork.
A word.
Say
dork.
It.
Dork.
Say
dork.
It. Dork.
I love giving tours of, like, I gave tours of the Tribune Tower when we were in there. I love giving tours of the state capitol in Wisconsin. I was a high schooler.
Yes.
I practically lived there. I love that place. I scared the hell out of senators, but.
Well, that when I first started coming down here in 2015, every time I would show up in the press box, a legislators were often like, "You're back?" I'm watching you.
Did you do the eye thing?
You can't make me. That's right. I see you. I see you.
Watching you. Every step you make.
And, you know, if you can't make it to the Capitol, as I do really encourage you, not just to watch what goes on, to watch how the legislators discuss the issues that are important to you. Beyond that, Springfield is a place I really encourage you to come down here to see Abraham Lincoln's home, the old state capitol, where, by the way, when President Lincoln was assassinated, they brought his body, of course, across the country on the train, and he was laid in state at the Capitol in the House of Representatives, where he had served 4 terms. And it's amazing to stand in that room and imagine 80,000 people who came to pay their last respects walking through that room.
Well, it's cool because you are in the basement. Let me tell the listeners here we're Skyping.
What it looks like.
So, and it looks like a catacomb. Either they aged the beer there, or there's like a stack of bones somewhere. I mean, no, I'm serious. This is what I'm looking at. There's like brick arches and stuff. Doesn't it? It looks like the Rapskeller or something.
Yeah, these are basically the foundation of the building is where the press room is. There's in this area there we have the NPR offices. There's a Central Illinois Radio down here. Across the hall is where the Tribune has their offices, where Rick Pearson and a lot of the writers spend their time. So we're allowed to, you know, mingle and stuff.
Nice. No, see, you love it down there, and you love the energy of politics. I mean, you people may not know this. You have a political science degree.
No, I have a history degree.
I thought it was
history.
Political science.
Mm-mm. History.
Degree. Okay. Mm-hmm. But, yeah. But
I study a lot of politics. Everything that I studied really had a lot to do with decisions that were made by legislators. I did a lot of work about the Civil War, a lot of work about World War II, when it came down to policy decisions that were made by presidents and legislators.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool to have someone, again, who's a fellow dork who gets energized by this stuff and sees the importance of it. And can sometimes see the poetry of it. It's rare, but that does happen in politics. Oh, now she's laughing at me. Yeah,
no, it's sweet. No, I don't. No, I'm laughing because
with me.
You know, no. You know, people. You know, I think come down here with preconceptions, and that includes me when it comes to my morals or beliefs or what I think government should do or can do. And I have to say, getting to know a lot of the legislators and having conversations with them, and also finding out how much respect they have for each other. There's a legislator who announced today that he will not be seeking re-election. Senator Dale Ryder announced that he would not be seeking re-election. And there was Senator Pat McGuire of Joliet, who's on the other side of the aisle, was telling me how much he's really going to miss having Senator Ryder as somebody who's there all the time, you know, that he maybe butts heads with, but they have a deep mutual fondness for each other. And having those moments, seeing them talk to each other and coming, you know, talking to me individually about how much they respect each other. And that's not uncommon here. There's some you know, antagonisms here and there, but of course, as they're going to be.
Yeah, go ahead. These guys and women, guys, you know, generic guys.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
I cartoon about them all the time, obviously, and I ridicule them. But deep down, I've seen how hard they work.
Yes.
And it's hard work. Mm-hmm. Sometimes not to the best, you know, end, but it's hard. And these people work hard. And so you got to respect that. And, you know, so again, you're down there. And so when someone says like a Dale Ryder or someone else says that they're leaving, that's got to be kind of hard. It's a fraternity. And it's got to feel like a siege mentality in some way as well, that people don't understand what you do. You know, all the useless people down there, politicians, blah, you know, and blah, blah, blah. But they really, it's hard work. We went out for drinks after a show. Remember that? And with a couple of political guys.
Yep.
And they're telling me about what their week is like. And that's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just constantly talking, and as it should be, they're talking to constituents, they're going to this meeting, that meeting, you know, this neighborhood group, that neighborhood group. And so, I mean, yeah, at some level, I really do respect it. I do. And
I know, and I was telling someone earlier that cynicism is easy. And getting mad at your legislators, I get it. There are things that are frustrating, and you see things happening. And I also, I was up late last night thinking about one of the things we discussed last night, which was it just doesn't feel fair when we're paying for the mistakes of previous generations. You know, the decisions that were made by the legislators, by governors, by us, by the people we elected, this isn't easy. You know, being an Illinoisan, when it comes right down to it, it feels like a lot. You know, it feels like a huge weight to carry. And you got to want it. I know that people want to leave, but there are a lot of people who are trying to make this state better, and that's what drives me to come down here, is that there are so many people that want better, not only for their families, but for their communities, for their children, for the future of Illinois. And that's inspiring to me. And that's what I saw tonight when I saw them pass a budget, a bipartisan vote, by the way. I saw the...
Was it?
Yes, it was. I didn't get the final numbers, but it was a wildly successful moment in the House of Representatives. And the budget, by the way, you know, as soon as I posted that they were successful in passing it in the House, people were writing taxes, 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 taxes. So this budget does not have all the stuff that people were concerned about. There are no new taxes in the budget for the tax for individual taxpayers in the state of Illinois.
So well, for that, but the capital spending.
Well, that, and I don't know. Now we have a little bit of a situation when it comes to having our guests on tonight. Last night we had four legislators, all from the House of Representatives, and today I spent time in the Senate, and I had slated folks for slots throughout the evening, and I'm starting to get messages. They are right now on the floor of the Senate debating the women's health bill. So I don't know that we are going to be able. I've already gotten messages that they may not be able to pull away and do the show. So we will be on the fly, I think, reaching out to other legislators, which I think we are.
This will be fun.
I know.
It's live radio.
It's fine. But I have to start. Fortunately, and one of the people that I grabbed as I was walking out of the House of Representatives, I saw Representative Will Guzzardi, and I thought, here's someone we should talk to because a lot of people want to know more about the legalization of recreational marijuana. And joining us on the line is Representative Will Guzzardi. Hi, sir. How are you doing?
Hi, Patty. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm in the basement. It's very festive down here, as you know.
As every basement.
It's
notoriously festive places.
Yes, exactly. I wanted to. A lot of folks were wondering about the legalization of recreational marijuana. First, I was telling Scott how long that took today. Was it about 3 or 4 hours today?
Yeah, somewhere in there. It was a very thorough, exhaustive debate. And I'm so glad that we passed it. It was a wonderful moment.
Well, Scott was wondering what it was that took so long today, and what it seemed to me was that after that took the amount of time that it did, you guys, you know, a lot of stories. Tell us a little bit about that, about why some of the legislators stand to tell their point of view, pro and con, on this piece of legislation.
Yeah, well, first of all, it's a big bill, and it touches a lot of different areas. I mean, it touches our criminal justice system. It touches economic investment, community development, professional licensing. It's a wide-reaching reform. Health, right? It's in all these different areas. There's a lot to talk about just on the substance of the bill. And also, you know, big change in public policy. So I think people... had opinions that they wanted to voice about it. And I was, you know, most of the debate was sort of substantive questions over the important issues. And then there were some people who had some sort of like reefer madness talking points that they wanted to get out there too. you know, opponents of the bill were saying that, you know, murder rates are going to go through the roof if we kind of legalize cannabis. And some of those other sort of more dubious arguments, but nonetheless, they were given their moments to voice those too.
That was something that I think a lot of people don't realize were the different elements of this bill. And correct me if I'm wrong; it's like a 600-page bill.
Yeah, it's very, very long. Yes.
And I'm guessing that you've read every single word and highlights
every word.
Every word. I didn't have a chance to tell you. I had caught you in the rotunda, and there was a young man who had driven from Chicago to witness the passage of the legalization of recreational marijuana. He was in the rotunda, and when I Scott, we were talking earlier about Lisa and Matt. When I was about to bring them up to the gallery. He said, "Oh, anybody can go in the gallery." So I brought Tomas up to the gallery. He has been involved in the recreational marijuana industry in Colorado and California, and represented by again. we were talking to Representative Will Guzzardi, who represents the 39th District. Rep, one of the reasons I wanted to introduce you is he wanted to thank you and others who have worked on this legislation. And he was saying that he told me, and I know I've heard legislators say this, and, you know, you get to the point where you're like, okay, you say that, but do we know that? This guy said that you have set the gold standard for what legalizing recreational marijuana should look like.
Yeah, I think the sponsors, Representative Cassidy, Senator Staines, and all the folks who worked on this over the course of years, really, they did a phenomenal job. And if you'll indulge me, I just want to talk about a couple of things that they did better than I think anybody else has done. So one is that they were very, very vigilantly focused on criminal justice reform. So the bill is creating a process between the governor's pardon power and actions of the attorney general, where we're going to automatically expunge over 800,000 records, arrest records, misdemeanors, and felony for convictions for people who are convicted of cannabis-related offenses in the past. That's an enormous, enormous transformation for hundreds of thousands of people in the state who are going to have their lives changed tremendously by this, because it's those arrests, even the ones that are separate from convictions, just the arrest record, you know, can be a scarlet letter that you carry around your whole life that prevents you from getting good housing, prevents you from getting access to federal student loans or college admissions. Job opportunities is a huge barrier to entry. So wiping that away for so many people is an enormous deal. I said enormous like 9 times, but it really is. It's enormous. I don't know what to tell you. The economic opportunities that we're creating in this industry, there has been, I mean, around the country where we have seen legalization, what we've seen is that before legalization, the cannabis market is dominated in the black market by people of color. And then legalization happens and the rich white investors take over the market. And we were very diligent in crafting this bill to make sure that, do our best to make sure that doesn't happen here in Illinois. So that the business applications all up and down the supply chain, they all have strong, they're not requirements, but the businesses are incentivized very strongly to hire people who have previous cannabis convictions on their record, to hire from communities that have been over-policed by the war on drugs, and to ensure that there's diversity in representation and ownership and employment up and down the process. So that's a huge deal as well. And I think that doing those two things right is going to make this bill better than anything else we've seen around the country.
Scott, go ahead.
I was just going to ask if it addresses the financial aspect of it. You know, right? I was in Las Vegas recently, went to a shop just to research. Really, I just wanted to see, because obviously we're debating this here in Illinois, so wanted to see how it works there and talk to people, boots on the ground. And it's a cash only business there. It's cash only in Colorado. It's cash in Washington and Washington D.C. and all the places where it's been legalized. Does the bill address the fact that, you know, that you can't charge it? You can't because of the federal laws are still remaining in place, which is getting kind of silly at this point, but okay,
that's the problem. That's right. I mean, I think that the reason why we're unable to address that in a more thorough way is exactly what you said, which is that at the federal level, it's still a Schedule I narcotic alongside things like cocaine and heroin and stuff. And so banks are, it's legally complicated for banks to be involved in the process, which is why these businesses so often rely on cash. I think that the bill has sort of contemplated some alternative regulatory structures, but I think that that's also like going to be an ongoing project in the state to see if we can try to set up some mechanisms for banking this money to allow businesses to really flourish here in a modern way.
Right. I know that in Colorado, for instance, they're trying to create a state banking system, which is curious because we had that, in the 1820s. But they're trying to bring that back for that, because walking into the dispensary was strange. You had these guys who were twice the size of me, and I'm not a little fella, because it's cash only, and they have $20,000, $40,000 on site every day. And that also creates a danger for the people who work there, quite frankly. And
sure.
So, I mean, all of that just seems, we need to address that in a serious manner if we're going to go forward.
I think that's exactly right. I mean, I think we are moving more and more toward a cashless world, right? And for this industry, which is really at the cutting edge and really expanding very rapidly and going to be a big part of our state's economy and our country's economy, there has to be a way for them to participate in that cashless environment too. So I mean, I think ultimately it's got to be a change at the federal level, but we're going to look at some innovative models at the state to see if we can help out.
Well, and that's a question, and I know that that the banking element of it touches on it. Someone else was asking, and actually, I believe it was the young folks, the young man who came down to Springfield was asking, you know, if it's illegal federally, how does that affect? You know, what does it mean? And do you think that having more states legalizing recreational marijuana, when there's a different administration, perhaps moves the country in a direction of it going federally approved?
Yeah, I think the more states do it, the more the federal government is going to feel the pressure to fix the problem, right? And that being said, the federal government often is, you know, lags behind the states on policy stuff. You know, it happened in marriage. It happens in a lot of issues. And then what happens is states lead the way, and we shape policy. And then the federal government, after enough states sort of take action on an issue, the federal government realizes that their only way forward is to address it in some kind of way. So it wouldn't surprise me if, after a number of other states continue to grow this economy, that the federal government realizes they have to be involved in it in some kind of way.
And the other thing that I saw the press conference yesterday with I believe it was the Black Caucus talking about, you know, destigmatizing this, and of course the expunging the records goes a long way. I know folks have been texting me and asking, what about people who are in jail right now for convictions? I'm not sure if you'd mentioned that.
Yeah. So there aren't actually a lot of people in state prison at the moment for cannabis convictions alone. There, for the most part, cannabis possession, simple possession, is a misdemeanor offense for which you don't spend any time in prison. So the challenge for most people who have interacted with law enforcement as a result of cannabis is the arrest, the conviction, and the record. The one piece that we didn't address in this bill, but that I'm interested in working on going forward, because this is not the last time we're going to legislate on cannabis, and we got a lot more work to do as the system evolves. But for some people, the cannabis possession of cannabis can be used as an aggravating factor. So there's like battery and aggravated battery, right? And the difference between those two offenses, there's a bunch of factors that can turn it from regular simple battery to aggravated battery. And my understanding is that having drugs on you in some cases can be an aggravating factor. So possession of cannabis, while it wasn't the charge that you got charged with, might be a thing that moved you up from a felony 4 to a felony 3 or whatever the aggravating factor might add, which could, can add years on your sentence. So I think the first thing that we're going to do is this big batch of these low-level offenses that we're going to wipe off the record, and then we're going to have to come back and take a look at the more nuanced cases where having cannabis on you or near you or whatever affected your sentence in some kind of way.
Scott, I have to tell you a little something about Representative Will Guzzardi that it just amused me today when I was telling folks. Am I right? Was it 4 years ago or 3 years ago when all you asked for was, could we do a study to see how this plays out in places like Colorado?
Oh, that's a fun story. It was a particularly sort of testy day on the House floor. The Republicans had gotten all mad at us about something. Who remembers what? and I got up to present this bill. And I was a freshman of my first year, so 2015. And I naively was like, hey, this is just a study. It's directing this agency to conduct this study. And they'll look at what happened in Colorado and other states that are legalizing, come up with some recommendations for Illinois. It doesn't cost any money. They're going to use their existing staff capacity, blah, blah, blah. The bill got, 34 votes or 27 votes. I mean, you need 60 votes in the House. It got thumped. I lost that bill so bad. And I had no idea that it was going to be like that. But, I mean, I think you bring it up because it tells you just how far we've come, right?
Four years ago,
studying this issue was like there was overwhelming bipartisan opposition to just having a study. And now here we are doing full-on legalization. It's a big, big change.
That was the first time that I met you, and Scott, when a bill is going to tank so wildly, when it's going to do so badly, and I mean they start mocking the legislator as it starts to build, the realization that everyone's going to come down hard on it. There's a trophy that comes out of a room out of nowhere. I believe it was the sergeant at arms. Did he bring it out?
It's called the Century Trophy, and so if you get 100 no votes on your bill out of 118 members, you get the Century Trophy.
And they start making sound effects for it, like it's going to be torpedoed.
What does it look like? Can you
describe it? Oh, it's massive.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I haven't seen it up close because that's how narrowly escaped the threshold. But
yeah, they just bring it out and they start waving it around that you just won the Century Trophy. Yep.
Exactly.
Well, congratulations on how far you've come with the work on this, and of course we're almost out of time. I just want to also quickly, how do you feel today with this different, you know, coming to the end of this session compared to that first year that you were here? How do you feel?
Well, it's amazing. I mean, this has been an incredible session. We're not quite done. We're going to come back tomorrow, I think, and finish up the budget stuff. And it looks like the big capital infrastructure project we've been talking about is not going to get done just yet. We will probably have to keep working on it over the summer. But, man, I spent 4 years here with Bruce Rauner as governor where we were just in total gridlock. We couldn't even pass bills accomplishing the most basic functions of government, right? The budget, just like spend, raise tax revenue and spend it on stuff. We couldn't even do that. And this year, in the 5 months of legislative session that we've had, we raised the minimum wage to $15 an hour. We legalized recreational cannabis and did massive criminal justice reform along with it. We're right about to pass one of the most far-reaching protections for reproductive rights in the country. We passed a constitutional amendment to make a progressive income tax structure, and we have a balanced budget in the state that funds our priorities in a significant way in the first time since I've been a legislator. It is a new day in Springfield, and I'm so proud and excited to be a part of it.
Well, we thank you for your time, and as we thank all the legislators who you know are working down here so hard, we thank you for all the work that you're doing and for being a public servant. And we wish you the very best. Hope you get a chance to get a break after this. And continue fixing the state, sir.
We're working on it. We're doing what we can.
Absolutely. Representative Will Gazzardi of the 39th District, we'll talk to you again soon. I'll see you tomorrow.
Yes.
Great. Have a great night. It is time now for our news, sponsored by Penny Mustard Furnishings. Here is, oh wait, you know you want to listen. Wait, I have another one. I have to do the thing. We're sending people to Prague, and need to let you know about that. WGN Prague? Radio wants to send you on a Blackhawks getaway for two in Europe. Listen to Win Your Way to Pucks in Prague weekday mornings at 7:40 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. Your news is sponsored by Penny Mustard Furnishings. Here is Roger Badish. Listening to the Patty Vasquez Show. We are broadcasting live from the Allstate Skyline Studios South. And it's not much of a skyline because I'm in the basement of the state capitol in Springfield, Illinois. Joining us in the Allstate Skyline Studios back in Chicago is Scott Stantis, the editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. And on the line with us is Senator Heather Steens. And I want to thank you so much for stepping off. I know that you're busy. You're in the middle of something very important. And I want to thank you for taking some time to catch up with us.
Happy to be with you.
I know that the Senate is now debating the bill that addresses reproductive rights in Illinois. We just had Representative Will Gazzardi on, who was saying that he's proud to have been a part of passing legislation in the House that is the most far-reaching protection for women's health. What is your sense so far of how it's going on the debate?
It's we are, I think, on the last speaker right now, so it's about to be voted on. I think it will pass. So I think we will provide the most well-protected reproductive health care in any state in the country for women.
Is there actually a chance it could fail?
I don't think so. I think it will pass.
Okay, because earlier in the day I talked to somebody who wasn't entirely sure because, well, you know, I don't think I've told Scott this before. The way it's described here, some of the folks say that the House is like the frat and the Senate is like the retirement home. And they
is, I think there may be something in between.
and they were saying that they felt that there was a risk, but you're saying that you're confident on this one.
I'm pretty confident, yes, it's going to pass.
And what is it that makes it a more comprehensive a protection for women's health?
It makes sure that that women themselves get to make the choice on who, you know, at what point they want to be able to have the abortions. It does not. It still keeps in place the protections I'm sorry. I think they're about to do the vote.
Okay.
So I can let you know in a second what it's going to actually be when I see it. Sorry. Okay. I was being distracted because of that.
Well, this is, I mean, that's the thing about this this moment is that, you know, Scott was just mentioning before the break that he feels like he's straddling two states because he lives in Alabama and Chicago, Illinois. And what a bizarre.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. It's like bizarro world. It's it's very strange.
It is, and what's really problematic for me as a woman is feeling like we're just pawns in a game. I understand that some women may not feel comfortable having an abortion and think it's wrong. I think that decision should be left up to them, their husbands, their own God, their faith, the decisions that they want to make. The fact that we're being used as pawns and having people pushing buttons in the state capitol deciding what rights I can have over my own body is just plain not good.
I stopped at Arlington's, which is a restaurant not far from here, and 2 days in a row I talked to the waitstaff, and the thing that was on their mind the most was this piece of legislation. There was a woman behind the bar who was saying, I cannot believe I got to be out there marching again. There are women who were very frustrated, and it was great to have that conversation with them about their fears and their concerns, and they're relieved to hear that there's a movement in Illinois to make sure that the rights that they already have remain in place.
That's right. And unfortunately, we're going to continue to probably have to have women from around the Midwest and farther away come here in order to be able to have safe legal abortions, given what's happening in many other places in the country.
It's hard to have a conversation. Like it is one of those conversations where I feel like I have to look over my shoulder before I start talking about it because it is so divisive. What has the tone in the Senate been in this conversation?
You know, people here are respectful. It's not quite as... It's been very sedate, very respectful. People feel very strongly about it, but they're still, we still are very collegial and know that despite our differences on this issue, that we will be voting together on a next bill. So it's been really respectful. I don't think it's quite retirement home, but I do think it's, people are at least listening.
Stay off my womb.
What other issues are you working toward? I know that we've is there anything else going on?
Cannabis legalization today too. It's been a big day.
It has.
So we passed that, and we're about to pass the budget. Next thing up will be passing the budget when this debate on the Reproductive Health Care Act is done.
Oh, so you guys, so this is actually, maybe you can help us out, because Scott was wondering, you know, we had heard that everything had to be done by midnight, and now we're hearing that obviously you guys are working past that and planning on being here perhaps tomorrow, even through Sunday. What are the rules when it comes to being done end of session by May 31st?
Well, it just takes a supermajority vote to pass things afterwards, so you can still do things after midnight. It just takes more yes votes to get them enacted. We'll likely have the budget done close to midnight, if not after, but we'll have Republican support. I do think there is a bipartisan, bicameral agreement now. I just think that clearly the House is going to be coming back tomorrow and finishing work on the Capitol bill and a budget implementation bill. We'll pass the appropriations bill, but not the budget implementation bill that helps enact the appropriations. And the Capitol bill will not be done at least until tomorrow, maybe Sunday. That Senate will come back sometime thereafter to vote on the capital budget and the BIMP, the budget implementation bill.
again, we were talking to Senator Heather Steen. She's the representing the 7th District and doing a lot of hard work. How I was asking Representative Guzzardi what his sense of this session has been in comparison to previous years. How are you feeling?
You know, I think we've gotten a lot accomplished, for sure. There's a lot more camaraderie between the chambers, and obviously we have a governor who is really willing to roll up his sleeves, listen, make deals. I think we're seeing that evidenced in the way this budget is playing out, where we're not just ramming it through with just Democrats, that he is sitting down and listening to all four leaders and getting to an agreement on it. So it's a very different tone and tenor, and I think it's much more hopeful and productive for the people of Illinois.
There's some news about the Capitol bill and gaming. Have you heard anything about Mayor Lightfoot's concerns about the casinos in Chicago?
Yes, I think that is something that I think while she's supporting the casino, I think she's got concerns about the sports betting. So I think there's going to be some reworking done. Sports betting was a part of it. I think there'll probably be some reworking done. I don't know where exactly it's going to land yet.
I want to thank you so much for all of your work and for taking the time off the debate during this bill. So have they finished voting yet, or are they doing their final
remarks? They're just about going to. So I'll go and push my button now.
Oh, go push your button, Senator.
Thank you so much.
Having
me.
You have a great evening. I'll talk to you. I'll see you tomorrow. Thank you. Thank you, Senator.
Bye.
We're going to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to check in with Representative Robert Martwick and see what's going on that end. There was a budget that was passed in the House, and I know that Scott still had some questions about the fair tax. So a lot of people still talking about that, wanting to understand the rates. So we'll cover that when we come back. You're listening to The Patty Vasquez Show. We'd love to hear from you. If you want to call or text, the number is 312-981-7200. Again, that number is 312-981-7200. We're in the state capitol basement. I mean, why wouldn't we be? More after this on 720 WGN. Loving the music that our producer Ashley Byhunt is playing tonight, keeping it upbeat. I am Patty Vasquez, and I am your host. I am broadcasting live from the Allstate Skyline Studio South. I'm in Springfield, Illinois, in the basement of the Capitol, and we are down here because there's a lot going on down here. There's history being made in Springfield. A lot's going on in the state that's going to change. There's the bill to legalize recreational marijuana has passed. It'll go to the governor's desk. There is on the floor, they have are wrapping up the debate on the reproductive protective health bill. And we also have, there's a budget, Scott, a budget passed. Well, you know who we should check in with? We should check in with Representative Robert Martwick.
Absolutely.
Scott Stantis is in the Allstate Skyline Studios in Chicago on the 18th floor. He is the editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. And joining us on the line is Representative Robert Martwick of the 19th District, joining us again. Because here's the thing, Rep. I know last night that we were having some technical difficulties, and I wanted to make sure you had the opportunity to join us again. Thank you so much.
It's great to be here, as always, Patty. I love being on the show, so thanks for having me.
What was today like? What did it mean to you? Some of the things that went down, whether it was recreational marijuana or passing the budget.
Really, as we approach the end of this session, it's monumental. I mean, the change between what happened in the 4 years preceding this to now, from such a completely and totally dysfunctional government, where the governor was just opposing everything we tried to do. Instead, now we have a governor who's willing to work with the legislature to get things done. And as a result, we've seen really tremendous legislation passed, big initiatives, really. These are profound changes that are coming to the state of Illinois, and they're progress. But the best part of it today was, amongst all those big initiatives, the first responsibility is and always will be to run a functional government. And that's the worst thing that we did over the course of the last 4 years. Because we couldn't run a functional government, we accumulated all of this debt, which put pressure for higher taxes, and in the meantime slashed vital services for those most in need, denying kids access to college, forcing seniors out of their homes and into nursing care, denying single mothers who are working the opportunity to work, instead forcing them onto public aid. So it was terrible what went on over those 4 years. Now we've got a governor who comes and works with the legislature, and in his first year we pass a bipartisan budget that pays down a massive chunk of old bills that were accumulated under the prior administration, makes our full pension payment, and increases funding for education. It's just, it's really a good day. Feels great.
There's a text from the 708 says, I am so happy to hear that the legislature came together in Springfield to pass the budget, because not having a budget has affected a lot of services in the state of Illinois. I work for the Chicago Lighthouse for people who are blind and visually impaired and veterans, and I heard that one of the programs we have there has been cut, and that there are deaf, as is the deaf and blind program. This is why it's so important for the legislature to work together. That's Dave from Oak Park.
Yeah, and this is, you know, you don't have enough time on your show for me to begin listing all of the programs where, really, I mean, our most vulnerable citizens, people who really need a little bit of hand so that their lives can be good, whether they were disabled, whether they were people living with autism or epilepsy, the heartless cuts that we made during the 4 years under the previous administration. Now, Governor Pritzker has balanced our budget, reinvested in the things that are necessary, stabilized our finances in 1 year, enough so that the leader of the Republicans in the House stood up and talked about the process, talked about being involved, talked about how this is a good thing for Illinois to pass a budget. What a change from 4 years ago, where everything was so partisan and so cantankerous. The idea that we could work together and come to a solution is it's wonderful. It's a wonderful feeling.
The 312, who I think that you've spoken to before when you were in studio, says, bipartisan ha. Some Republicans are going along because they know their votes just don't matter. And I having watched a lot of the conversation, the debate, and spoken to the you know, legislators on both sides, I have to disagree with that. And I'm guessing you do as well.
Yeah, so to the 312, as you know, Patty, I love to be very respectful to your listeners, but that is absolute and complete nonsense. And you know not what of you speak, sir. The Republicans engaged in hard and long negotiations to make sure that their interests were represented and their concerns were addressed in this budget. And the leaders of that party came out, and we have bipartisan support on a budget. This is a good budget, and to say something otherwise is really irresponsible.
And that goes for the legislation when it comes to the legalization of recreational marijuana. There were Republicans who voted for it, and they were very clear about why they did, whether it was Senator Batnick. I don't have all the other names with me, but I spoke to him, and Representative Cabello was in favor. He wasn't necessarily 100% on board with everything that was in the bill, but he felt that something needed to be done.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is a recognition. I think the biggest speaker on behalf of the Republican caucus was David Welter. And David Welter is someone who I think is really you know my affection for my good friend Mark Batnick. I have that same feeling for a guy like David Welter, a guy who is, you know, recognition that we have different approaches to governance, we have different ideology, but is willing to find a way to compromise and look for ways to work with the opposing party. And David Welter found that in, Representative David Welter found that in the cannabis legislation, recognizing that too many resources in a state that is in such dire need of them and has such a great lack of them, too many of them are going to fight a senseless war on drugs when it came to marijuana. And so he said, it's time to move forward and you know, create a program that works. He was actively involved in the negotiations. He represented the interests of his conservative Republican district and became a voice really for all of those districts to make sure that their interests were represented in that legislation.
There's something that I was thinking about last night, and we kind of touched on this a bit in our previous conversation. I was thinking about how frustrating it is really for Illinoisans who are tired of, you know, paying for the mistakes of previous generations. And the you know, the obviously everyone wants to do better, not only for our families and our communities, but also for our kids. And there, you know, people push back on something when they hear fair tax. They're like, it's not fair. And I don't think that people quite get what that is. Oh, by the way, I just got a message from Senator Staines. She said it did pass the reproductive
Health Act.
Yes.
Oh, did she give a number?
Wonderful.
She did not give me a number. Oh. Do you want? I can ask. But as I was saying about having to pay for the mistakes, whether it's the pensions or our debt, other aspects that a lot of people are they're frustrated. And I don't. How do we win back? I guess this is the question. How do
so?
We win
what
back?
I would say to them, yes, is no one is more frustrated to have to pay for the debts accumulated by the prior generation than me. It drives me crazy. I think about the things that our government could do and could do with low taxes and had the prior generation been responsible. They were not. I can't do anything about it, but what I can do is make sure that I don't repeat the same mistakes that they made that got us into this mess in the first place. And so that means being fiscally responsible, eliminating deficits, balancing budgets, so that as we go forward, we're not accumulating more debt. When we do that, it puts us in a position to fund education and pay down our debts. That relieves pressure on our property taxes, and it puts us in a position to be able to pay for a tax decrease, right? We've seen throughout the country the history of states that are so hell-bent on the ideology of low taxes that they do it when they can't afford to pay for it, states like Kansas. And it puts, like Illinois, and it puts the state into a financial death spiral. Right? That's irresponsible. That's what prior generations have done to us. And to think that we should repeat that is as crazy as what they did in the first place. And so being fiscally responsible says, let's balance our budgets. But there's only two ways to do that. Raise the taxes on everybody or institute a fair tax where we can give some relief to the middle class, the working class, and the poor. These are the people that are fleeing our state. These are the people who need a little relief and a helping hand to make it in the middle class. And that's what we're doing with the fair tax. I think it's a great idea, but of course I'm the sponsor, so I'm somewhat biased, but you know.
Yeah, but I'm also looking at, so, you know, the fair tax, and effectively what you're saying to the people of Illinois is, trust us, we're not going to, you know, we're going to tax the rich people. We're not going to tax, you know, the higher, you know, the upper middle class or the middle class. And so you got to admit, given what's been happening, you mentioned the last 4 years, and yeah, that's true. But even the years prior to that, I guess the question is, and I don't know that there's an answer, quite frankly, Representative, it's an unfair question, because this is, how can we trust you? Because your only answer can be, trust us. But there are no governors on this bill that say that you can't at some point go down. You have a capital bill that's going to raise taxes all over the place. It's a big tax state. And so what do you say to someone like me, who's a middle class guy, who's looking at Springfield and saying, okay, how can I trust you?
Well, I would say, if I'm honest, you shouldn't, right? I mean, this is the nature of a citizen democracy, is that we elect our representatives, but we need to hold them accountable. Now, Scott, unless I'm mistaken, I think we're similar in age. We're at least of the same generation, as it were. We voted for the people that created this mess.
Yeah.
This is our fault. Mm-hmm. This is our fault. That's the way a citizen democracy works, of the people, by the people, for the people. It's our fault. And so it's, you know, and I always say, look, democracy is great because we get to hold people accountable. We get to make the changes when they happen. And so the lesson of the past is stay engaged, stay informed. And when those people make the decisions you don't like, make sure you change them. Make sure you throw them out of office and you put people in that will do the things that you think will make the state be better. That's the only guarantee in democracy. But it's no different under the fair tax than it is now. People keep saying, well, the flat tax makes it hard to raise taxes on the middle class. It's always going to be hard to raise taxes on the middle class. It's going to be the same pressures whether it's a graduated tax or whether it's a flat tax. No one is ever going to want to raise taxes. It is a terrible, terrible thing to do. Nobody likes to do it, Democrats or Republicans alike. But the bottom line is, if we're looking at the math, if we don't do something about it, I guarantee that 6.5%
6.5% flat tax that we need right now will go to 7, 7.5, 8. That's not, you can't do that. And so this is a way of getting ahead of our financial problems, balancing our budgets, and paying down our debts slowly over time. It's not going to solve 40 years of mistakes in 1 year, but it puts us on the right path. How do you trust us? You trust us. The only thing that I can offer in trust is that the good news is we're not making the same mistakes of the past. And you don't have to look too far into the past. All you have to do is look 2016, when we overrode Governor Rauner's veto to pass the tax increase. Did we use math? Did we say, gee, how much money do we need to balance our budgets? No, we said 4.95% because it's less than the 5% that Quinn did. It was the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen in my life. For the first time ever, we have a governor who is actually using math to look at our problems and says, this will solve our long-term fiscal problems. And again, now it's up to us. Because he won't be here forever. I won't be here forever. Leader Durkin won't be here forever. It's up to us to hold our elected leaders accountable. That's the way the system works.
We've been talking to Representative Robert Martwick of the Rootin' Tootin' 19th District. Representative Martwick, where can people go to find out more, to educate themselves? And obviously, it shouldn't be the only place. If people don't believe what you're saying or think it's a crock, at least take a look at the numbers and the math, as you mentioned. Where can they go to find out more information about the fair tax as we head into next year and they have the opportunity to vote on it?
Yeah, so and I'm going to forget the site right now, but if you go do a Google search for Illinois Fair Tax Calculator, look for the one that has the .gov after it. Please don't use the one that has the Illinois Policy Institute. That is not an accurate fair tax calculator. If you want to see how this will affect you, go to the fair tax calculator that's done by the state of Illinois, and you'll see a .gov address associated with it. You can find me on Facebook. Because of the work I've been doing, I have been lax in putting up my informational Facebook videos, but I intend to get back at that soon. And over the summer, I'll be putting up a number of Facebook videos that go into great depth about the fair tax. So you can hear about the history of how we got into our problems and the options for solving it. So you have the information you need when that referendum question is on the ballot and you get to decide. You can find me on Twitter at Robert Martwick. And call me at my office, 773-286-1115. I'd love to sit down and have a cup of coffee and a conversation.
There you go. Representative Robert Martwick. And by the way, coming up after the news, I'm sure that Senator Jason Plummer will disagree with everything you've just said and make the 312 very happy. So
that's what makes democracy great.
There you go. Thank you so much, Rep. Get some rest, and I'll see you tomorrow. It is time now for our news. Here with everything you need to know is Roger Badish. You are listening to the Patty Vasquez Show and broadcasting live from the Allstate Showcase Studio South. I'm in the basement of the state capitol. I'm in Springfield, Illinois, and back home in Chicago is the editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, Scott Stantis. He is in our Skyline performance space, actually, our Allstate performance space. I want to thank everyone who has joined us so far. For those of you who are wondering, we have booked several senators who are tied up in budget conversations. The legislature is still working on passing bills. So what they're working on, Scott, is the budget. We have the capital spending bill. Those are two. Gaming. So the gambling bill is one of the things that it kind of puts a bit of a wrench in things, because they need the gambling bill as part of the capital spending bill for our infrastructure, for building roads and bridges. Right. And there is some... Ooh, did you hear that? Can you hear that?
No, what's going on?
So I'm in the basement, so I have a live feed to what's going on in the Senate. So I believe they're calling something right now, and I don't think that the senators who we had booked, and we will try to continue to book to have them on the show. We have Senator Plummer, who has to be on the floor, and Senator Ryder, who also has to be on the floor because they are going to be debating the budget, I believe. And I'm actually texting Senator Ryder right now, who announced he would not be running for re-election. And he, of course, is a very dynamic legislator, is very passionate about his work, and I was looking forward to having him on the show. In particular, for a lot of our listeners, you know, there are fewer Republicans in general, obviously in the Senate and the House of House of Representatives, and they and the other thing, Scott, you are an exception. Most of the conservatives I talk to go to bed early.
Well, they're old and cranky.
Whenever I say, by the way, and that's not, you know, it's not to say that Democrats are always like, yeah, I'll stay up late. There are Democrats who will tell me that I'm on too late. And what we're going to be doing in the next few months is making sure that I make time to record some interviews so that our listeners can get, you know, a feeling for what's going on both sides of the aisle. The fact is that when, you know, you have a party that's kind of frustrated with what is going on, they're working very hard to fight for what they believe in, and it doesn't necessarily leave enough time to get on the air with us, especially right now when they're in the middle of working on these bills. So I want to thank the legislators who have even agreeing to be on late. I mean, that's a big deal to say you're going to be on at midnight.
It's a
big commitment. So I want to thank those. Yeah. So I'm texting Senator Ryder right now. I'm trying to do double duty. I'm booking the show while we're talking, Scott. So far, you know, I know that you've been following this, whether it's the legalization of recreational marijuana or the women's health bill. Of course, the budget is prominent in so many of our minds when it comes to paying down our debts and making sure that our bills get paid without raising taxes. What's your sense so far of what you've heard from Springfield, Scott?
Well, it sounds like, I mean, I'm looking at the vote totals now, and that's why I was curious what the Senate vote on the reproductive right bill was. But the House cannabis vote was 66-47. So that's a little closer than I expected, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. And on the budget, it was 83-35, which is astounding to me that so many Republicans looked at this budget and thought this was, you know, that they saw something in it that they could vote for. You know, so what else is coming up? We have reproductive rights. You have cannabis laws. You have the budget that's now passed. You have a Capitol. Mm-hmm. Now, you said that there is a fly in the ointment on the Capitol bill because Mayor Lightfoot has some reservations some aspect of the gaming bill, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, you know, so the Capitol bill, but there are aspects of the Capitol bill that are disturbing. I mean, yes, there's not. They passed this bill. It's budget. It's balanced. There are things from my perspective, I'm a fiscal conservative, first and foremost, and, mm-hmm. you know, we have a surplus in the state thanks to the Trump economy. I mean, that's the truth. And rather than look at this money and say, okay, why don't we pay down some of the debt, pay some of the bills we owe, the first instinct was, let's spend it on other stuff. And you're just going, oh my, that's what got us into this trouble in the first place. Let's try to be adults and pay down our debts. On the Capitol bill, you've got some tax increases that are pretty strong. I mean, they're going to, what, double the gasoline tax is one of them. The liquor tax is going to go up. There's still some stuff that's disturbing for someone like me. And going forward, so my sense of this, though, is that it's a well-oiled Democratic machine, Democratic Party machine, and Democratic Party issues. And there's nothing wrong with that. They're the ones who won the election, you know, up and down the ballot. They won by a lot.
There was a listener who said that Republicans are just voting in favor because they think that their votes don't matter. So to that, I would say, then why would a Republican stand and say this? Representative Dan Brady said, it's not perfect, and is there such a thing? He said, this bill, this budget does four things. It's balanced. It pays down our debt. It stabilizes the pension, our pension responsibilities with payments, and it funds education, not just K-12, but also higher education. It helps high tax areas lower their property taxes. So for those, and again, these, you know, I say this over and over again, it's easy to be cynical. And this is why I ask folks to find out what their legislators are doing, but maybe it's also watching the ILGA.gov website so you can see folks giving these legislators giving their speeches and sharing their thoughts, their morals, and their process to arriving to their votes. And so, again, that's from Representative Brady, who is a Republican. Leader Durkin, Jim Durkin, rose to say that this is something that we're doing the best for our kids. Tonight is a start. This is what Representative Durkin, he is the minority leader. He said, tonight is a start. It's balanced and it's fair to Illinoisans, to businesses, to taxpayers. And that's from a Republican. We're doing the best for our kids. There's a 5% increase in higher education. There has been devastation over the last few years for our college students, for community colleges, for places like the University of Illinois, as we know, Southern Illinois University. He also addressed the tragedies that have befallen our children who are in the care of DCFS, right, who have been, I mean, did you know, Scott, that it was about 100 children who died last year who had been visited by or addressed by DCFS. And in this year alone, 2-year-old Tanaja Barnes, 2-year-old Jahir Gibbons, 9-year-old Byron Casanova, and of course, AJ Frumd, who we all know in the last few weeks, story has gripped the headlines. And the budget addresses the shortcomings of DCFS and other organizations that are doing their best to help the people in our communities. I mean, so many of these caseworkers are out there, you know, putting themselves in a situation where they can't handle the caseload. I mean, there are some people who are handling up to 25 cases, and it's overwhelming.
Yeah, there was a case years ago, and the name of the child, I forget. Horrible for me, but the guy who hired me at the Chicago Tribune, Bruce Dold, won a Pulitzer Prize for writing about this kid who was returned back to a home and was hung by his mother. It was a terrible, horrible story.
Oh.
And he did a series of, he was a columnist at the time, Bruce Dold was a columnist, he's now the editor and publisher of the Chicago Tribune, but at the time was a columnist, and wrote a series of columns about this case and the need for reforms, and they passed them. Funding reforms, lower caseloads, things like that. But over the years, those got diminished and diluted and went back to a situation where we're now having a DCFS. And I don't blame the caseworkers. I mean, they're not paid much of anything to do really tough work. And the burnout is high. The turnover is high. These people are doing the Lord's work by a lot. And so I don't blame them. So, yeah, so the fact that they're finally coming back to addressing these issues and in this budget. I mean, you know, I think Durkin would probably say, you know, don't let perfect be the enemy of the good, which is exactly what they're looking, I think, maybe many Republicans, why they voted for this budget. But, you know, none of us here have certainly seen it yet. You know, and that's the other thing about the budget process down there that makes me angry, quite frankly. And that's,
of course,
you know, they hand it out the last minute, you know, so you have 24 hours to look it over. People like me really can't, and so it's going to take a couple of weeks to look this over and see if it's, as you know, as fair as and as balanced as we are being told. And, you know, excuse me for being cynical, but I mean,
no, I know, and look, there's, I get cynical too, and I'm sorry, but I get inspired by coming down here, and I know not everybody's interested or want to do that or even visit with your legislator. And look, imagine if we were able to convince everyone to go into the legislator's office, and there was, and all of a sudden you've got lines out the door.
You know what I think? I think people should run for office. I think good people should run for office. There's a lot of reasons not to, but I think we've got to start convincing people, good people and smart people, engaged people to run.
I agree.
Scott?
Yes, go ahead.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I was intrigued by the story that you brought up about the child who had been returned to his parent and had been hung. Was this back in 93? I'm finding a story.
Yes.
From 93. I
believe it was around that time.
That was the mother's name was Finnegan. And her 3-year-old child had been returned to her by DCFS. And she took out her anger on the child based on her anger at the DCFS. So a lot of change is needed in that agency. As Patty said, it's not only overworked, but it's dealing with a lot of handcuffs, I think, when it comes to what the law says they should be doing, as opposed to what I'm sure some of them feel in their hearts after investigating these cases that they should be doing.
Well, and, you know, we talk about also, you know, I mean, there's another side to this whole thing. Do you realize there are 800 800 kids waiting for foster care in the state of Illinois.
And that's just the state. Can you imagine what it is nationwide?
Yeah.
It's mind-boggling.
So I would challenge people, like, you know, Patty mentioned earlier, I worked and still have a home in Alabama. You know, for all those who are want to apply these draconian rules to abortion, okay, you know what? You want to walk the walk and talk the talk, then I would strongly urge you to take in a child or two into foster care, because you can, and you should. And it's just remarkable. I don't. I'm not that good. I haven't yet. That may happen. But anyway, I don't know where I'm going with all this, other than to say there's a need. And they're addressing it. And so, okay, baby steps.
Let's take a break here. When we come back, our conversation continues on WGN 720 AM. Joe, we're... Oh, hi. Hi. You are listening to the Patty Vasquez Show. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios in the basement of the state capitol, with the Allstate Skyline Studios South, Scott.
Sure, the bowels of the state house.
I don't know if saying bowels of the capitol is a very appealing thing. by the way, one of our listeners says that Patty is laughing and giggling about the state. I don't know. I've been coming down here for 4 years now, and if you want me to sound serious all the time about everything that is happening, Scott, we can... Oh, we have Representative Sarah Feigenholz on the line. Representative Sarah Feigenholz joins us. How you doing, Rep?
Hi, man. I'm doing great, Patty. How are you?
I'm very well. As you can imagine, our text line is blowing up, and I can't address all of them. In particular, some of it is coming in about the bill that just passed in the Senate, which already had passed in the House. Tell us a little bit about what you saw happening tonight.
Well, you know, the Senate took up the Reproductive Health Act, and of course, it's been a very busy day. The House passed recreational cannabis legalization. It was a very long debate, but again, the RHA was a very important bill to pass. You and I discussed it, I believe, last week. Or was it this week?
It all starts to run together, doesn't it?
It's like, you know, the last week of session is always like being in the Twilight Zone in Springfield.
It really is. It really... Go ahead.
So, as you know, one state after another is falling, and Roe and abortion rights are being overturned. I believe Louisiana's governor just signed a bill to ban abortion after 6 weeks. And we discussed how this was a strategy to overturn law.
Right.
Today, Illinois passed a law to the governor that would protect a woman's right to choose in the state in infinitum.
I'm sorry. What was that?
Forever.
Oh, forever. Well, I think there are a lot of people have questions about that. I was telling Representative Martwick and Scott and our listeners that I spoke to a women in Springfield. I mean, there is a difference when you, of course, we know that in Chicago there's a mindset, and a lot of people think of Chicago as this liberal bastion. And I was here at a restaurant, and there were women completely independent of why I'm covering this or what we're talking about, not knowing who I was. And they started talking to me because they were like, hey, are you in the Capitol? What's going on with the women's health bill? Are they going to pass that? Because I don't want to have to go out there and march anymore. And that's in Springfield.
Yeah. Well, you know, people were really feeling threatened by what we were seeing when one state fell after the next, and I think that Alabama was the big wake-up call.
Right.
And so, you know, I think we're very fortunate in Illinois. I think we have great progressive thinkers. We have some amazing new members in the Illinois House and in the Illinois Senate, and these freshman women are... I mean, I can't, they're just powerhouses, each and every one of them. And they demanded that this bill get called when they saw what was happening around the country. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, the Women's Caucus has grown dramatically. We make up half of the Democratic Caucus now. So we are really starting to feel our power. And I think these are the things that we are starting to push for. And I think it's only just begun.
Well, Representative, I know that you've got a lot of work to do. We thank you for your time. We've got to run for the break. We'll talk to you again next week. I want to talk to as many legislators as we can to sort of understand, because I know folks are texting us about what this women's health bill entails. Unfortunately, we just don't have the time tonight, and I want you to be safe and be well, and thank you for your time.
Okay, bye-bye. Thanks, Daddy.
Of course. Have a great night. More after this on 720 WGN. Patty Vasquez Show, and I am broadcasting live from the Allstate Skyline Studios South. I'm in the basement of our state capitol in Springfield, Illinois. Joining us on the line, well, joining us in studio is Scott Stantis, the editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. He is the Allstate Skyline Studios in Chicago, along with Ken Jacobowski, the president and CEO of Sirius Enterprises. And on the line with us is Representative John Cabello. He is the representative of the 68th District. And Representative Cabello, thank you so much for coming on with such short notice. We appreciate your time.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Oh, no doubt. Here's the thing. There comes a point where it's like, okay, we've had far too many Democrats, and believe me, the tech screen reflects that. We had scheduled Senator Ryder and Senator Plummer to join us tonight, and because they are in the middle of floor debates, we wanted to make sure that folks hear, you know, the other side of a lot of issues that are important to them as well. What was your take today? I know that we spoke a little bit about the cannabis bill, the legalization of recreational marijuana. What were your thoughts during that that debate?
Well, I thought that the bill sponsor, Kelly Cassidy, did a fantastic job. She was honorable and straightforward in her debate. I congratulate her for her hard work that she's done. I obviously was a no vote, but you got to give credit where credit is due. She tried to answer everybody's questions and was doing it for 4 hours straight. And there were some people that were pretty upset that they cut it off after with only three people left to speak. But they did what they did, and we have that taken care of in the House.
And I want folks to know as well that tonight that there was a budget that passed in the House, and several legislators, of course, spoke on it, both Republicans and Democrats. And we've talked a little bit about it coming into the segment. What were your thoughts on what the has involved when it comes to how we spend our money and what, you know, I heard it was balanced. Is that your take on it as well, that it's what everyone was kind of hoping for? It's not perfect, but it's a start?
I have no idea. I still have not seen the full bill.
Wait a minute. I'm sorry. What? None of it?
Yeah, I still haven't seen the full bill. In fact, if you're watching the Senate pulled it out of the record.
No, I'm not watching it. I don't. I'm watching Ken and Scott. So they've pulled it out. So they're suspending it, or what does that tell listeners what it means to suspend to pull it out?
I'm not. They pulled it out, so they're not voting on it.
Okay.
Apparently, they found a 2.5% increase for lawmakers' pay.
Wait a minute.
What?
Yeah. Surprise. That's why there is no way I can vote on a bill that I haven't seen. And anybody that's voting on it and hasn't seen it are going to have some surprises in it.
Yeah, I would imagine as much. Okay, well, that seems
now,
a little
I'm bit... hearing that they're saying, oh, we're sorry, that was a drafting error. Well, then why are we voting on bills that nobody has gone through yet?
Well, that's what this day has felt like, where nobody knew what was happening. And it wasn't just you. I spoke to several of the representatives who were like, I haven't seen anything. I don't know what I'm voting on. I don't know what's coming up. I don't know how. And obviously, no one knows how this ends. And that's got to be frustrating.
Yeah. I mean, it is a poor way of serving the taxpayers who pay for everything.
Well, I'm looking at my numbers here from a story I just went online, and it says here in the House the budget passed 83-35. Now, are you telling me that it's I'm just confused. Are you saying now they've pulled the budget or they're
from the Senate?
No, so we passed it, and it goes over to the Senate. And apparently, while the Senate was debating it, somebody found that and raised the question: is why are we giving ourselves raises? And it blew up from there.
Did someone think that it was just going to go unnoticed? Like no one was going to catch that? Did they put it in smaller font? I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen it. That's the problem. Well, how the hell can we vote on this stuff when we don't see it?
Okay, so this is something that I do want to say has come up. There was a bill yesterday in the Senate, and it had to do with sex education for the developmentally disabled. And there was some argument about it. And when I talked to the legislator, he goes, look, we don't even know what the program is. And it does seem as though there is this game of, you know, let's just get it in there. We'll make them vote on it. They don't have to see it. Let's just get it done. And is that partly because there's a supermajority on the Democrat side that they're just shoving things through?
Yeah, I think that, but then also negotiations. If you were watching anything that was happening today, you know, it was a really quick version of Pong. You saw one leader going one place, and then the others would follow. And I mean, they were just running all over the place. There'd be an agreement, then things would blow up, and then there would be an agreement, and then things would blow up. This is why we start in January. But we didn't do anything with the budget until after the April break. And then it was slow moving. I mean, we should know when May 31st is coming up, and we should have everything done way before then so that it's a smooth ride for the taxpayers. But that's not how it is.
Well, and you know, I've talked on the show before about how, you know, it's easy to be cynical. And I think after hearing what you've just described when it comes to this budget and that there are things in there that, one, that you haven't even been able to read it, and there was a forced vote, and that now the Senate has pulled it because it was discovered that there was a raise for the legislators by 2.5%. The 773 text, skepticism justified, these guys are pigs. I mean, that as you just described your peer, Representative Cassidy, I mean, that's not how we talk to each other when it comes to having these conversations, but there is politics involved here, right?
Right. Yep, absolutely. Unfortunately, politics always win over doing the right thing.
Oh, man, no one likes to hear that, Representative.
Well, but you know me. I'm not sugarcoating anything. I never do. People need to know how it is and how it really is. And, you know, we're adults. If they don't want to hear that, then they probably shouldn't listen to me, because I'm not going to sugarcoat it, and I'm going to tell you exactly how it is, because otherwise you're not going to get the straight story, because you hear from other folks, oh, everything's fine. Everything's fine. We got everything taken care of. Oh, by the way, we accidentally gave ourselves a 2.5% increase in our paychecks, but don't worry about it.
The 630 says, my stomach hurts so bad listening to this BS with the Illinois government. I can't wait to move in about 10 years. And that's what a lot of folks are saying. You know, one of the things we've talked about, Representative, is the fact that, you know, we are paying for the mistakes of other generations. Those have gone before us. The decisions that, you know, to borrow against the pensions, to act like it was a credit card, not understanding what the details were, just as you were, you know, talking about this this budget, it seems to be done without regard, and now we have to carry that burden. Is there anything you can say to taxpayers that gives us some hope that things will go on, you know, that we can work things out, that we can, you know, sort of get ourselves out from underneath this?
Yeah, I mean, but some people are going to have to understand that we have to make some cuts. And we can do that in several different ways. Easily enough, we can do it by not even really doing anything. Just let's look at some of the other states that are flourishing and implement the policies that they've made, and watch the economy and watch what's going on in Illinois. Would do a 360. I mean, we wouldn't even have to do any work for it. Let's just enact some of these good policies from other states and see what happens.
Can you give us an example?
There, it's got to be working here.
Would you mind giving us an example of the policies that you've seen work in other states when it comes to cuts?
Let's take property taxes away from the school districts being able to levy the property tax. And make
so many people really want that. Right, right. Go ahead.
So the state will actually, the taxpayers will save money because the state will pay for the education. Indiana was able to do that and cut their property taxes. Now, I don't have the paperwork in front of me on what they do, but there's so many different things that we can do. Number one, let's start by reducing legislators' pay, not increasing it. Why are we in session for an hour a day for the last 3 weeks with a huge cost to the taxpayers? Because everybody gets a per diem from coming down. Everybody gets their staff gets extra pay for being here. I mean, there's a lot of things that we can look at, and I apologize. I don't have all of the specifics in front of me. And
that's okay. No. Please. It's been such a long day. And as you mentioned, look, I've talked on the show before about some of the things that I've watched from the press box. And I thought, really, is this what we're doing today? Is this how we're spending our time? Is this how you're spending tax dollars for, you know, Illinoisans? And so I understand the frustration. And that's why I talk about I want, and one of the things that we're trying to accomplish by covering Springfield is to sort of remove that mystery that sort of that you guys are inaccessible. You're approachable. All the legislators are, from my experience, are approachable. And folks need to learn more and talk to you. Come into your office, you know, email and say, hey, what's going on? What does this mean? Because you've even given out your cell phone on the air before. You don't have to do it now. I don't know if you've changed your policy.
No, I haven't. Everybody gets the number that wants it.
Yeah. That's the thing is that it's about having these conversations. It's texting. And I appreciate it. I know that people are angry. There are things that are important, whether it comes to the marijuana bill or women's health or obviously our budget. We all have some skin in this game, and you have to be involved. You have to be invested. Shaking your fist at the sky is one thing, but getting involved is another, and that's what you're doing. You're trying to tell people that what's going on. What do you hope happens this weekend? And, you know, we've talked about how the bill has been pulled from the Senate. What do you expect or hope for?
Well, I'm assuming that they're pulling it from the Senate to erase that line item out of the budget. The easiest way to identify the best cuts would be going line by line through every single line item in that budget. And we could do that if we really started in January when we first start the session. And it would be so much easier for everybody to be able to identify those cuts as we're going line by line. My cell number is 815-621-2196. I'll give it again before we leave. But yeah, I mean, we need to be accessible. We need to listen to people, even if we don't agree with them. I mean, I'm not right on every issue and I make mistakes. So, we should be listening to every side of every issue. That's our job.
We appreciate your time. I know it's been a long week. I hope you get some rest, and we look forward to having you on very soon. And, of course, we're going to have you in studio whenever your schedule allows. You got to be part of the Finally Friday panel. We need you in studio, sir.
I look forward to it. Again, it's 815-621-2196.
You're going to get some texts because there are listeners who are texting and saying, this guy is singing my song. So thank you so much for your time.
Or they're saying, what an idiot. One or the other, right?
Wait a minute. Ken, you got a question? Wait, we have a question from Ken.
Quick question. So if the Senate has pulled the bill and is taking out the pay increase, does that mean the bill has been altered to the point where it now has to go back to the House to be revoted on?
I believe what we would have to do is concur with the Senate amendment. I am not that technical guy that knows exactly, because I'm not sure when I was leaving the Senate, it was pulling it out of the record. So I don't know if they took that out and did an amendment and went on. So we'll have to wait and see exactly what they're doing.
You know,
they can create rules and regulations at a drop of the dime, so I'm not sure what they're up to right now.
Okay.
Sir, it is always a pleasure to talk to you again. We've been talking to Representative John Cabello, and we will have you on as soon as your schedule allows. And, I mean, now that we have your cell phone number, you got mine. You can call anytime, sir.
Absolutely. Let's call that guy that you wanted to call last night.
That sounds good.
Let's tell him that you need to stay down here another day.
Oh, no. I'm down here. You saw me.
Oh, gotcha.
I was in the press box. Yeah. Yeah, my boss, Todd Manley.
Back.
No, Todd Manley said, let's do it. Stay down there. It's an important day, and we're grateful for all the work that you do. Be well.
Nice. Take care. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. He's such a good guy. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening to the Patty Vasquez Show. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. I mean, I hesitate because it's weird to say that I'm in the Allstate Skyline Studios because I'm in a basement. I'm in the basement of the state capitol in Springfield, Illinois. Joining me in studio in our Allstate Skyline Performance Space is Scott Stantis. He is the editorial cartoonist of the Chicago Tribune, and Kenji Kabowski, who is the president and CEO of Sirius Enterprises. And on the line with us is another dork who comes out of Springfield. Dave, that's not appropriate, is it? Do you consider yourself a political dork? I think all four of us are dorks.
I absolutely resemble that remark.
Dave Lundy, the president of Aileron Communications and regular contributor to WGN Radio and CLTV, joins us on the line. You were down here this week as well, and what was your sense of things compared to the last few years?
Notwithstanding the last representative who was, by the way, I caught it as he was mid talking with that.
Dave.
Yes.
None of the other guests have commented on previous guests. You give your take. His segment stands on its own. You give your take on everything else.
Okay.
Well, we didn't get any Republicans on. I had all of the senators canceled. We had Ryder, we had Plummer. They all canceled. And there were too many Dems. You got to make it balanced, Dave. Don't go after him. Just tell us what you think.
No, I wasn't going after him. I was just saying that notwithstanding the tenor of that conversation, the experience that I had down there, and I've been down there pretty much every week for the last 2 months,
yes,
and much of this session, is that it's a very different place than it was the last 4 years. I mean, look, I've personally been in the room when there have been very productive conversations between JB and Durkin and, JB and Brady, and there's been a lot of very positive conversation taking place, and people feel like they can talk. And so it's just it's a very different environment. And, you know, apparently this one error here is a little bizarre on the pay raise, but, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff happens on the last day of session. That's not new. Some things are new. New is that people are getting along, people are talking, there's conversation, and you don't have the acrimony that we've had the last 4 years. But some things, you know, everything old is new again, which is, you know, the last day is crazy. And this last day has been really freaking crazy.
It's well, look, in all fairness, I would say the last few years have been much crazier. This has been all over the map. I mean, they'll call the legislators to the floor of the House or the Senate, and then 2 minutes later they'll, you know, go through a few motions and then then break for caucus. Someone will say, we're going to caucus, we're going to committee, we're going to do all these different things, and things come to a screeching halt. And that's
right.
Would you say that that's how the energy has been this week? Which...
Yeah, the one thing I would say is I hosted my lunch today, and we had some longtime Springfield observers, including a former legislator for many decades, who said that this year that the last couple of weeks things seem to be moving like you're underwater, and things seem to be slowing down.
Why is that? What happened? I mean,
it's hard to say. I mean, it almost seemed like. So I'll give you one example. On on it wasn't the budget, it was the fair tax. On the fair tax, every single Republican member of the House insisted on speaking in the debate. So the debate lasted several hours. That just happened again on the Reproductive Health Act, which both of which passed. And so it's things. Look, if you can't move with some speed in the last couple of days, you get into some trouble, and not everything passes by the deadline. And that's where we're at.
Well, it makes you a little crazy, especially as a citizen. You know, just and as Patty calls us, a dork who follows politics, but just as a citizen, you look at this, and they've had months and months and months and months to work this, hammer this out. You would hope that it wouldn't be this last 48-hour dash to finish all this work, to get a budget through, to get the capital bill, to get the reproductive rights, to get cannabis, to get all this stuff at the last second. Why couldn't this all have been done weeks ago? Because
people should never wait until April 15th to file their taxes, and yet every year they do.
Well, okay.
I'm just saying. I hear you. And yes, there. You know, it's a weird.
Wait a second, Dave. It's Ken.
Yes.
I was supposed to have filed my taxes by April 15th.
What's this? Holy smokes!
I better get moving.
We have to go to the news, you guys. We're going to come back, and let's go ahead and go to our Finally Friday panel. We don't really tackle the headlines every single day on my show, so we at least want to get to a couple when we come back from the news. Again, we're hanging out in the Allstate Skyline Studios South. I'm in the basement of our state capitol in Springfield, Illinois, and we have Scott Stantis, Kenja Gabowski back in our Allstate Skyline Performance Studio in Chicago, and on the line with us is Dave Lundy. It's time now for our news. Here with Everything You Need to Know is Roger Badish. You are listening to the Patty Vasquez Show. I'm live from the Allstate Skyline Studios South. I'm in the basement of our state's capital in Springfield, Illinois. Joining us from the Allstate Skyline Performance Space is Scott Stantis, the editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. We also have Kenja Gabowski, who is the president and CEO of Sirius Enterprises. And on the line is Dave Lundy, the president of Aileron Communications. And we want to thank everyone for joining us tonight, hanging out. We've been talking a lot of state politics as we wind down the General Assembly session. There's obviously a lot going on nationally. And Ken, you know, over the last few months, and actually the last couple of years, you will group text us, me and Dave Lundy and Eric Elk, the Finally Friday panel, and you get very excited. The president's done. This is going to do him in. He's going to be. And so you wanted to talk tonight about how we're moving closer to impeachment, which seems to be, I don't know, is either going to be, he's either going to be done with the presidency at the end of the next election or the election after that. So,
I think it's a cumulative effect. And mm-hmm. I think we saw something interesting today. At least I thought something interesting. I felt that the House would impeach Trump, at least begin hearings, and that before it got to the Senate, I thought Trump would resign, because I don't think Trump wants to go through that. And I thought today what we saw from Trump was an extremely nervous and kind of out of sorts guy who desperately does not want to be impeached. And I'm starting to think that if this thing does continue on in the direction that I think it's heading, mm-hmm. I think we may have some surprises left. Of course, there's also a part of me that thinks that if Trump remains on the ballot and is defeated, that he's not going to leave the White House either. That he's going to be carried off literally kicking and screaming. So I go both ways as constantly as you do with Trump. But I most people say that the Democrats the House cannot impeach Trump. It would be risky for the Democratic Party because they think back to what happened to the Republicans during the Clinton impeachment. And there are two differences, huge differences between now and then. When Clinton was impeached, his popularity, his favorability ratings were about 63%. Trump is at 41. and also secondarily the issues, the offenses that are charged are dramatically different now than they were then. And given that people are not reading a 448-page report, and many people were surprised that there was something negative in the report until Bob Mueller spoke this week, I think having Mueller testify, having others testify, brings this to life. I think it'd be a huge benefit for the Democrats. I think it'd be an absolute crush for the Republican Party. They'd be faced with having to sanction and approve criminal conduct. Very different than what happened back in the late 90s. So we're heading into an interesting time.
Yeah, I'm not. If I'm Nancy Pelosi, I'm looking at this and thinking she's clearly making the political, calculation here. Is this a win for the Democrats going into the 2020 election? It's so close to that election, and you run the risk of one turning President Trump into a victim, which he loves to play, which is weird, but there it is. And I think he does become. It also solidifies his support. I mean, his supporters, I just spent a week with my in-laws, who I love very much, but they watch Fox News 29 hours a day, and they are going to vote. That's a 35%. That's a solid core of the Trump support. They're going to get out there and vote. I guarantee it. And now, does this mean, how do you get millennials, and how do you get...
But he's in the latest Fox poll and in the latest Quinnipiac poll, both of those polls showed that 54% of the American people say they will not vote for Donald Trump under any circumstances for reelection. That's an enormous hill huge. That he has to climb.
That is a huge, but, again, you're looking at an economy that's good. We're at peace, which, and relative peace, which passes for peace, I guess.
More people in the Quinnipiac poll and also the Fox poll, more people said the economy was either excellent or good, 73%. Then you have to go back 18 years to get to a level that high. Yet Trump was at low 40s favorability, which is incredible. He should be high 60s, low 70s with the way things are going.
No, I'm not. I'm just laying down a case for and why Nancy Pelosi, who would be the one to pull the trigger on impeachment proceedings, why she's not right now. And she obviously is getting more and more. There's what now? 40 plus Democratic Congress people who have said
it's over 50 now.
Is it over 50 now?
And it's okay. I'm okay with her not doing it now. I think the public, we need more education. Several months of education, I'm comfortable with it.
I don't know, Ken. I think the longer, either do it or don't do it, but I think stretching out the process doesn't necessarily help anything at all. Again, commit or don't commit. Here's what I say to Griffin sometimes. Do or don't do, but don't not do.
Well, I just don't think, Patty, they've laid the predicate yet. I mean, the Mueller report is there, but most people haven't read it. I think a lot of the congressmen haven't read it.
I'm not going to read it. I know you have. Thank you for that.
I have read it. I do think that I think it's important to have the Mueller report brought to life in the venue and through the medium that people respond, and that's television. And I think that's what I think. Once the subpoenas are all upheld, which they will, I think probably 3 to 5 months from now, you're going to start to see a stream of folks testifying, and maybe even before then, because I think Mueller's probably going to testify very soon.
What do you think, Dave?
Ken and I have been having this debate for frankly months now, and especially since the Mueller report came out. I don't know how you impeach him with the American people, even those who don't like Trump, saying, no, I'm not there. I'm not ready to do it. And so Ken and I earlier today were debating over some numbers and the differences between when Bill Clinton was impeached and now, and the differences between the nature of the charges, et cetera. But one number is the same, which is that back in when Bill Clinton was impeached and now, the American people weren't with the Congress when they went to impeach him. And so I just don't think you can do that. I don't think you can impeach a president if you don't have if you don't have a majority of the public on your side. And so Ken and I do agree that the only way to get a majority of the public on your side is to bring the president's criminality into bold relief And that actually was a point that Donnie Deutsch made on Morning Joe this morning, which is he said, stop saying the what Donald Trump refers to as the dirty, disgusting, filthy I word impeachment. Just start talking about we are conducting an inquiry into Trump's criminality, a Trump criminal inquiry, and just keep saying Trump criminal inquiry over and over and over again, and then you know see what comes out, see what we can come out. I don't think that launching an impeachment proceeding today. It's going to work. I think it's going to backfire. And everybody who's saying, well, we should just do it because it's the right thing to do, I'm sorry. The right thing to do is to ensure that the guy who has tried to destroy the rule of law in 2.5 years doesn't get 8 to do it in.
Well, and Patty, if I can just amend what I said before, I certainly would vote for impeachment tomorrow. and I think we're going to get there. But if we go through the process that Dave just outlined and I talked about earlier of educating the public some more, bringing this Mueller report to life through television, and the public numbers don't move, I could see it would be a reasonable argument not to impeach at that point. And, you know, I used to get very upset with Dave when Dave would tell me that he was, you know, when Dave would outline his arguments for why we shouldn't impeach, because I feel so strongly about this. But in the last couple of weeks, I've read a lot about the framers and their views on impeachment, and I'm far more comfortable now with the position that Dave has. I think he's wrong, but I don't think it's an unreasonable approach to consider and to take politics into account, because that's exactly what the framers intended for people to do.
Look, you know, if people, you know, can't hear the words that Robert Mueller said in his comments earlier this week, if we had confidence that the president clearly did not commit a crime, we would have said so. The problem with that is that there's a subtlety to that. It's almost like a double negative. If we had, then we would have, then we didn't. And when we needed a definitive statement.
But he can't say it, though, because he then goes on to say in the Mueller report, 2 pages, he explains why you can't make a statement like that, because it so prejudices him, because there's no forum that he has to defend himself. None.
That would be if he indicted him.
No.
A crime. Even being definitive.
If you're indicted, you can go to court and in front of a jury of your peers. You can try to clear yourself. In this case, it's just thrown out there. He has no way to defend himself. It really does completely stain the presidency and paralyze it. So I think Mueller did the right thing.
Yeah, but his comments though the other day. I mean, great buildup, and the Democrats have been pushing and hoping that this would be their savior, and he would give them the roadmap to impeachment, and it was kind of ridiculous, and I said so at the time. But the statements he made were still so vacillating. It was like he stood there and effectively said he's not guilty.
Exactly.
I encourage you to read the Mueller report, that section again. It's such an interesting thought process to understand why you cannot come to any determination as to his potential guilt. You cannot go near that. Now, so he gets around it the other way by saying, if we were able to say that we knew that he did not commit a crime, we would say so, and we didn't say so. Well, okay, what does that mean? Well, the opposite means we think there's probably a crime.
Oh, my God.
But he can't say it because it wouldn't be fair.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. It's like Mueller is obeying Robert's rules of order, and... Donald Trump is taking the table, throwing it out, stomping up and down, and just abolishing any semblance of order. It's like, no, dude, you're bringing like not even a BB gun to a gunfight. You're bringing a slingshot with just a rubber band in it, and the other guy's got an AK-47. You just stop with this. I get the rectitude thing. It's cool. I appreciate it, but enough already. You have got to get up there and go to the Congress and testify and answer the questions, because it's the report speaks for itself partially, but it leaves a ton of things unanswered. So, for example, okay, you said that you can't consider whether you would indict him because you are not allowed to indict a sitting president. Okay, given what this guy did, if he was not president, would you indict him? I mean, it's a really basic question.
I know.
And the answer, of course, is yes. But he doesn't want to have to say that. Well, I'm sorry if it's inconvenient to your sense of propriety. There's a lot more at stake here.
Just before we go to the break, I just have a question. Do you think what do you think the fallout would be? This is a different topic, but still with President Trump, about how they were trying to cover the USS John McCain.
Oh my God!
Oh, good God!
It's an embarrassment. It's an embarrassment. Not only is it an embarrassment to the White House, but more than that, it's an embarrassment to the U.S. Navy, who went along with that. I mean, I can't believe the Navy would do that to one of their honored. It's just unbelievable.
What bothers me is how it was covered, which the initial reports, of course, said that the president ordered this or somehow he was directly responsible. He wasn't. But what's weirder still is that he has staff members who say, okay, we can't let this guy see this.
Or, well, that's how bad
it's one of his trigger words.
That's how bad it is, that a staffer actually thought that and the Navy thought to go along with it because they know. I mean, that's how bad things are, right? That tells you all you need to know.
Well, that's how twisted things have become, is that they're sort of trying to anticipate, oh, well, he's not going to like this. And it's disheartening that that's how the military or whoever made the decision is operating.
Well, they know that his fragile ego can't handle any sorts of slight. I mean, it's really, we're dealing with a really warped human being. Who has an inability to reflect on himself in any kind of rational way.
And this is when I close the text screen, because I can't possibly that's going to come after what you just said.
I think he's rational, though, to a certain extent.
Or Dave?
Trump. Trump. Dave's another matter. But from what I saw today and from what the reports are today, he's scared to death of being impeached. I'm telling you, folks, if you got a...
I don't get that sense.
If you got either. Today, for the first time, I did. So I will say this. Anybody, they're gonna legalize gambling in Illinois, save a few shekels, and put it on Trump will not last his four-year term.
Oh, my God.
You'll get tremendous odds.
No. I will take that. Scott, will I take that bet? Oh, we gotta up this.
I don't bet against Patty.
I'll take
ever.
The odds. I'll take the odds on that. The odds will be enormously high, and I think there's about a 2% chance, but that it could happen. I really think it could happen.
Before we go to the break, obviously. Yes.
Ken and I have literally been having this argument over this exact bet for, what, January 20th, 2017?
Yeah, a long time.
He's not going anywhere.
He's not going anywhere.
No, but if it happens, just make sure you tell everybody where you heard it first.
Let's take a quick break here when we come back. Tell me something good. The 312, your assignment, because you have been, I don't know if you do voice attacks, but wow, you got some time on your thumbs. You need to tell us something good. And I'm just saying that's your assignment. Otherwise, we'll find out what happens to your text. More after this on 720 WGN.
Siding, windows, doors, leaking basements. Roofs that need to be replaced. How about all those chipmunks messing up your yard? Well, no matter what's going on in and around your home, I can help. Join me, Lou Manfredini, for House Smarts Radio, Saturday mornings from 7 to 10 a.m.
Lou Manfredini at House Smarts Radio, brought to you by Ace, the helpful place. Later this morning on 720 WGN.
Imagine how wonderful life would be if you never had to clean windows again. Hi, this is Tonya Khoury, and my family business, Green Tea Services, can make it happen.
Service to a green tea.
Our beautiful green tea windows are built with the newest technology, self-cleaning glass. Dirt, dust, and water just roll right off. And these windows are energy efficient, EPA certified, and made here in the U.S. with a lifetime warranty. When it's time to update your home with windows, doors, or siding, call Green Tea.
800-5-GREEN-TEA.
And now, for a limited time, our highly trained technicians will install your self-cleaning windows free. Yes, for a very limited time, Green Tea window installation is absolutely free. That's huge savings. Don't wait. Call us now for details and a free estimate. Call 800-5-GREEN-TEA.
Green Tea Services. Service to a
Green
Tea. 800-5-GREEN-TEA.
800-5-GREEN-TEA. Or greenteaservices.com.
This is attorney Lou Cairo of the GWC Law Firm with your Chicago Legal Minute. Are you driving right now? When was the last time you actually looked at your cell phone, checked social media, or read a text? Seriously, you probably done it in the last few minutes or less. And if you did, you're unfortunately not alone. What people don't always realize is when you drive 60 miles an hour, you travel 88 feet a second. So that average 4-second text or social media review means your vehicle traveled longer than the distance of a football field. And all the while, you're looking at your phone, not the road. Bad things happen when drivers take their eyes off the road. Think before you tweet. I'm sure that even you will agree, it can wait. If you've been injured in an accident by a driver who is paying attention to their cell phone rather than the road, give us a call at GWC. We would love to add to our over $2 billion in settlements and verdicts on your behalf. Call GWC at 312-999-9999 or visit us at justicestartstoday.com. GWC, Justice Starts Today.
The numbers are in.
WGN Plus is where Chicago comes for podcasts.
Here's what's going on with WGN Plus. Legal Face Off has their fair share of legal news bubbling up this week, but there is one without a doubt that's at the top of the list. Sit-down stand-ups are grilling and learning about newbie comedians Brian Williams and Ted Wilson, while Technori is diving in headfirst into the Shy Wellness Challenge. I think we could all use a wellness challenge, am I right? Look them up. WGN Plus on iTunes and Google Play.
This is the Patty Vasquez Show.
Follow me on Twitter at Patty Vasquez, CHI.
On 720 WGN.
Tell me something good. Tell me that you love me, yeah.
You are listening to the Patty Vasquez Show as we wrap up our Springfield coverage from our Allstate Skyline Studios South. I am in the basement of our Capitol right now, and I have to tell you, I want to get to all of our guests tonight to make sure they get there something good in. And Dave, I know that was it's sort of a shortened version of our Finally Friday panel, but tell me, do you have something good to tell us?
You know, I do, and I have to go back to where we started. It's something that we have learned in recent years you can't take for granted. The state of Illinois passed a budget tonight. It was passed by both chambers. It's on to the governor. It's actually balanced. This hasn't happened in infinity. It's been years and years and years since you've actually had regular order in Springfield. And I'm very encouraged. I'm very proud of my friend. And I'm very encouraged for what's to come.
And for those who are, look, again, we've talked about cynicism, and is there more to be done? Of course, we have a huge load to carry here, but that comes with a $200 million surplus that will go towards paying down some of our debt. For those of you who are wondering,
it's a big deal, and that's a real budget. You know, I also am on the Civic Federation board, and we look at all these numbers and. This budget is real. There's a lot of other stuff that is still a work in progress. We still got to deal with pensions and property taxes, and but we are making progress. And you know, the governor got his $15 minimum wage, his fair tax, the Reproductive Health Act, pot, the budget, and by the time the weekend's done, he'll probably get the rest of what he was going for. So I feel pretty good about that.
There you go. Scott, what's your something good?
Well, I think it's important.
Oh, you have to turn your microphone.
I think it's important to point out that I've been on. You're very kind to have me on the last two nights. In the last two nights, the Chicago White Sox have won.
And you must now come in every night that the White Sox.
If we want them in the World Series this year, yes.
Apparently,
that's my something. Nah, go Sox.
Go Sox. There you go. Thank you, Scott.
You're going to go numb from sitting in that chair. I'll leave it at that.
Ken, I know that you had a really long day, and I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about that.
No, I don't want to get into it, except it was very educational. I learned stuff that you read about on TV. I actually was involved in it, and it was really interesting. But today, for all baseball fans, is the 20th anniversary of the first time replay was used in a baseball game. And it was used accidentally. Cliff Floyd, native Chicagoan, hit a home run in Miami, Florida. They called it a home run, and Frank Pulley went to the TV camera, turned the camera around so he could look through the viewfinder and watched a replay, and overruled and called it a double. He actually got fired because he did that, because he wasn't supposed to do that. He got fired at the end of the year. But that was the first time ever replay was used in a baseball game, and of course now it's used several times each game.
Wow. Okay, interesting.
20 years ago today, so God bless Frank Pulley.
I don't know if we've ever had a replay as our something good. Usually we go with something. Why is that personal for you, Ken?
Oh, I love baseball replay. I think it's great.
should they get rid of umpires behind the plate?
No. That would be craziness.
Because of the digital aspect of
why? Because you can call.
No, you actually can't. Those little boxes that they have, they're not accurate. That's the.
Well, I looked into the umpire.
Yeah, I'd rather no. I think the umpire's fine. Although today it hurt the Cubs. In extra innings in the 10th inning, Cubs on a 3-2 pitch threw a strike 3 curveball. Umpire called it a ball, and it led to the Cubs' loss tonight. I still can't believe the guy called it a ball. It was unbelievable. I watched the replay about 6 times. Neither could Joe Madden, by the way.
Well, so there's my point.
Well, it's okay. It's part of the game.
Okay. I love your love for that, then. I want to say that my something good is I want to thank our listener, Lisa, who reached out and said, hey, I'm coming to the state capitol. She, you know, here's the thing. Like, when we were walking and talking, I realized that we probably don't agree on a lot of things when it comes to laws in Illinois or the things that passed in this building today. And yet, that's not the point. You know, I know that there are listeners who either text or are listening or want to shut down and go, I don't want to hear this anymore. I get it. You know, you don't feel yourself reflected on the air or maybe on television or wherever it is that you're seeking a conversation. And part of that is, you know, we can't be all things to all people. And many of the times we are coming up with our opinions or our thoughts as we're having these conversations. And I encourage you to listen with love.